next presenter listening to your program is Dana Thomas, but we're fortunate to have Dr. Sharp here. Dr. Thomas couldn't be with us, but we're fortunate to have Dr. Sharp here to offer a presentation about enhanced surveillance for chikungunya virus-associated fatal cases in Puerto Rico. And Lieutenant Commander Sharp joined CDC in 2010 as an EIS officer stationed at CDC Dengue Branch in Puerto Rico. After completing EIS, he remained at the Dengue Branch as an epidemiologist, where his responsibilities have included leading outbreak investigations of dengue, chikungunya, leptospirosis, and Zika virus in Puerto Rico, in the southern United States, the Pacific Islands, and several countries in sub-Saharan Africa. So if you would help me welcome him to the podium to offer his presentation on enhanced surveillance for chikungunya virus-associated fatal cases in Puerto Rico in 2014.
Thanks very much for that kind introduction, Julia. Chikungunya was first detected to be locally circulating in the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico in early May of 2014. After that, it rapidly spread throughout the island and affected nearly all municipalities within 6 months of detection of local circulation. By the end of the year, or I should say after the first year of transmission on the island, there were over 28,000 reported cases from throughout the island, and of these, about 4,400 were laboratory positive. However, not all cases were tested because the laboratory diagnostic capacity was rapidly overwhelmed, but this did represent about two-thirds of cases that were tested, testing lab positive. So we can speculate that of those 28,000 cases plus that were tested, about two-thirds of those actually had laboratory evidence of chikungunya. And this does include eight cases that were reported through passive surveillance that had evidence of chikungunya virus infection. Now, I note that these were cases reported through passive surveillance. As I think probably most people in the audience are aware, there are a number of deficiencies of passive surveillance. I won't go through all of them right now. But we did suspect that there may have been additional chikungunya virus-associated fatal cases in Puerto Rico. And to better enumerate those and investigate those, we utilized a system that CDC, in collaboration with Puerto Rico Department of Health, had initiated in 2010. The system is called EFAS, Enhanced Fatal Acute Febrile Illness Surveillance System. And this system, as I mentioned, was initiated in 2010 with the initial objectives of better defining the incidence and epidemiology of fatal dengue cases in Puerto Rico, and also elucidating the etiology and epidemiology of non-dengue causes of fatal AFI. And obviously in this presentation, I'm going to be focusing on chikungunya. So EFAS operates by identification of fatal cases through two primary mechanisms. The first I've already described, the passive surveillance system. If the case is reported through passive surveillance, then it's counted within EFAS. The majority of cases identified through EFAS come from the cases identified during autopsy at the Forensic Sciences Institute of Puerto Rico. So basically somebody dies in association with febrile illness. Forensic pathologist thinks, hey, maybe this is dengue, maybe this is chikungunya, maybe this is melioidosis, leptospirosis, whatever it may be. And they fill out a case report form, they collect autopsy findings, and they also collect serum as well as tissue specimens at autopsy. And we strongly recommend that they collect at least liver, kidney, lung, spleen, and heart, but we get a whole grab bag of tissues that I won't go into for the moment. All these specimens are then taken for diagnostic testing. Serum and tissue are tested by PCR or RT-PCR for chikungunya virus, dengue virus, and leptospirosis species at minimum. And tissue specimens are tested by the same pathogens by immunohistochemistry at CDC in Atlanta. And other pathogens are tested based on histopathologic findings. So in 2014, during operation of EFAS, there were a total of 59 fatal AFI cases identified. About two-thirds of these had tissue and serum specimens submitted, and just about one-third had only serum or blood specimens submitted. 30 of these cases had chikungunya virus nucleic acid detected by RT-PCR in serum and or in tissue specimens. And this represented a rate of 0.9 chikungunya virus-associated fatal cases per 100,000 residents of Puerto Rico, adjusted for the period of time that chikungunya virus was known to be circulating in Puerto Rico. And of these 30 individuals with chikungunya virus detected in a clinical specimen, only 7 of them were reported to the Department of Health, so under 25%. To describe these chikungunya virus-associated fatal cases in a little bit more detail, median age of these individuals was 61 years and ranged from 6 days from a neonate who almost certainly was infected through vertical transmission as her mother was symptomatic upon delivery, to an elderly individual who's 86 years of age. The large majority of these individuals were adults, all but 2 of them were adults, and just about 2/3 of them were male. Nearly all of these individuals had at least one comorbid condition, which is consistent with what's known in the literature about chikungunya virus-associated fatal cases. Most common amongst these comorbid conditions were hypertension, diabetes, and obesity, all at just about half of all the fatal cases that had a comorbid condition. 27 of these cases had more than one comorbid condition. However, there are only 3 individuals had only one comorbid condition. Of those who had only one comorbid condition, these were diabetes, hypertension, and asthma. There were 9 cases that had what we would consider to be a severe comorbidity, meaning that chikungunya virus may have played minimal role or exacerbated the severe comorbid condition, including chronic heart, liver, or kidney disease, sickle cell disease, and leptospirosis. There were 2 cases that had no comorbid conditions, which was one 9-year-old female, as well as the 6-day-old male that I had described a second ago. In terms of when these individuals died after illness onset, median day was 6 days after illness onset, ranging from 1 day through to 28 days. A third of these individuals died at home, outside of the healthcare system. These are cases that would effectively never get picked up by the passive surveillance system, at least not as a fatal case. And six of these individuals had never sought medical care, meaning that 1/5 of these cases that we identified would have absolutely no chance to get identified through passive surveillance. If you're not seeking care at all, then you're never going to get reported as a fatal case unless you have an enhanced fatal surveillance system. There were 27 cases that had either an available medical record or we were able to conduct a family interview. Of these 27, 12 of them had been admitted to the hospital, and of those 12, medium duration of hospitalization until death was 2 days, with a range from 0 to 23 days, and about 2/3 of these cases were admitted to the intensive care unit. Amongst these 27 cases, common signs and symptoms were fever, arthralgia, myalgia, rash, and chills, all pretty consistent with what we know about the clinical course of chikungunya. And the most common medical complications that we were able to abstract from medical records were either shortness of breath or some signs of shock, cyanosis, edema, encephalitis, hematemesis, or disseminated intravascular coagulopathy, DIC. The most common causes of death as listed on the hospital discharge diagnosis, so you can kind of take those with a grain of salt somewhat, for those 14 cases were either respiratory failure, DIC, septic shock, or sepsis, or viral syndrome, and also some sort of infarct or embolism, as well as encephalitis, all of those to various rates, which are shown here. Now, as mentioned, we did have tissue from a number of these cases, from 24 of them that were RT-PCR positive and had tissue submitted. Those specimens sent to CDC, just under half of those, 11 of them, had chikungunya virus antigen detected by immunohistochemistry. Of those 11, there was further evaluation conducted by the epidemiologists and other scientists at the CDC in Atlanta, at the Infectious Diseases Pathology Branch, and I'll finish up with some findings about those 11 individuals. So there were only nonspecific changes that were evident in all of the tissues that were observed, including edema, congestion, and changes related to comorbidities, including chronic renal disease and cardiovascular disease. So really nothing specific associated with chikungunya virus infection. There's also some evidence of immune stimulation, splenic immunoblasts, bone marrow hypercellularity, and inflammatory infiltrates in cases where hand tendon and synovium were available. There were no characteristic or diagnostic histopathologic changes identified in visceral organs by H&E examination alone. So immunostaining by organ, just about half of cases were positive in liver, as well as in heart and in kidney. About two-thirds were positive in lung. Almost all cases that had tissue from spleen available were positive in the spleen, and about 90% were positive in the skin as well, which is consistent with some of the clinical features associated with rash in individuals with chikungunya virus infection. Five of six individuals that had specimen from hand tendon available were positive by immunohistochemistry, and 7 out of 10 that had specimens in bone and or skeletal muscle were positive. And here you can see evidence of chikungunya virus antigen detection in intravascular platelets, as well as cardiac connective tissue and in myocytes in a specimen from the heart. Actually, the lighting is probably not great to see this. I don't know if we can adjust the lighting or not. In terms of where localization was seen throughout other areas, mesenchymal tissues as well as mononuclear phagocytes were seen to be frequently positive, as well as several nerve cells had staining both in as well as around the specimen. There's also evidence of direct infection of megakaryocytes and platelets. And you can see here that follicular dendritic cells of the spleen had evidence of infection, as well as the vessel itself, as well as Kupffer cells in the liver. I think it's probably fine. So in skeletal muscle from myocytes, there's also evidence of infection in adipose, tendon, and connective tissue around skeletal, as I mentioned, skeletal myocytes. And this is the nerve cell that I was mentioning that has evidence of infection both within and in the surrounding connective tissue. Last, this is a specimen of bone that was taken that has both periosteum, bone, and tendon, as well as bone marrow. In the upper right of this image to the left, you can see there's evidence, or maybe you can't see, there's evidence of infection in the bone marrow that's blown up to the right. So where you're seeing the darker staining, there's evidence of infection in bone marrow. Also evidence of infection in the periosteum, and this is a megakaryocyte in the bottom right here that has evidence of infection as well. So this is suggesting that megakaryocytes can be directly infected by chikungunya virus, which then may be associated with one of the observations of thrombocytopenia in severe cases of chikungunya virus infection. So overall, there were 30 chikungunya virus-associated fatal cases identified in Puerto Rico in 2014, which equated to an incidence of just about one case per 100,000 residents per year. The large majority of these cases were adults with one or multiple underlying medical conditions. There was no histopathologic hallmarks in major visceral organs, which is similar to some other viral infectious diseases, such as dengue and influenza. In rare cases, we can conclude that chikungunya virus can be directly associated with fatal outcome, as in 11 of these 24 cases that we had tissue available for evaluation had evidence of viral antigen in tissue specimens. These antigens were located primarily in mesenchymal tissues and cells of the mononuclear phagocytic system. There's also extensive and widespread detection of antigen in multiple organs, again, in these 11 out of 24 cases, which do represent 11 out of about 28 or so reported chikungunya virus cases that were clinically apparent. So a rare outcome, but an outcome nonetheless. So these immunohistochemistry results do correlate well with the clinical infection or the clinical picture associated with fatal chikungunya cases, and may help explain some of the aspects of the pathogenesis of chikungunya virus. Thanks for your attention. Happy to take any questions.
Does anyone have any questions for Tom? Yes, sir.
Well, I think the six-day-old was part of the 11th series here. Tissue available?
No, that one we only had blood available, unfortunately. Autopsy was declined. No, was not. Was declined by the family.
Anyone else have questions for Tom? I had a quick question. When you're talking about finding the virus in the tissues, do you think that's because people were viremic, or do you think that was some evidence then that there was actual viral infection in those specimens?
Yeah, so in the large majority of cases, when you're seeing virus in inside a cell, that is going to be evidence of viral infection. If you're just seeing a coating of the cell or lining of a vessel, it's difficult to rule out one versus the other. but the group in Atlanta is in the process of looking for a nucleic acid specific to chikungunya virus by in situ hybridization to rule in or out that possibility. Thanks.
Andrew Bingham from Florida. I saw that there was a wide range of how long it was taking the people after their symptom onset to die. For the people who died at home, did they have a more abrupt death after onset, or was it more delayed?
So there is a range there in that when individuals are dying for a variety of reasons, the biggest one being, what are they dying from? Is it some complication of chikungunya or potentially more directly associated with chikungunya? Those individuals that died at home, one of them, specifically the 9-year-old girl, was within 2 days. So it's very difficult to rule out that she had something else going on that was undiagnosed, but reportedly she was otherwise healthy. And there are some details of the case that suggest that she went from not feeling very well to non-responsive within about 36 hours. So, again, difficult to really accurately interpret that case because we don't know if she had something else that may have exacerbated or that chikungunya virus infection may have exacerbated. But for the most part, the ones that died at home were comparable to the ones that did seek care, with the exception that they didn't have any medical interventions.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Have any additional questions for Todd? Thank you very much.
Thank you.